time I think of you, I always catch my breath, and I'm still standing here, and you're miles away, and I'm wondering why you left. And there's a storm that's raging through my frozen heart tonight. I hear your name in certain circles, and it always makes me smile. I spend my time thinking about you, and it's almost driving me.
InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's what's happening on this week's show.
How much do you know about the Fifth Amendment? Some top scholars consider it one of our most important rights. How can you avoid being wrongfully convicted of a crime?
The Fifth Amendment is not just for the guilty. It was intentionally written for the protection of the innocent. And it's no less valuable to the innocent, who have just as many rights to assert the privilege as the guilty do.
Then, an expert says many Gen X women these days are facing a midlife crisis with money worries, job concerns, and just feeling overwhelmed, all part of the equation.
The reality we saw in our lives was quite rough. 40% of us were children of divorce. A lot of times we didn't have the money for college. The combination of reach for the stars and you're on your own, it's really setting people up for failure.
Those two stories and more are ahead on this week's show. InfoTrack begins right after this.
The good folks at Wendy's Wendy's have a revolutionary new product for you. Introducing the new Orange Dreamsicle Frosty. It's like a time machine that takes you all the way back to now, the year 2024. It's the classic, creamy, orangey flavor you remember. Dare I say, it's new timing. It's the flavor you grew up with, just all grown up. Head over to your local Wendy's establishment and get yours while supplies last. The new Orange Dreamsicle Frosty. Here for the now, for now.
Limited time only at participating Wendy's.
When you use Bounce dryer sheets and your clothes look amazing, it's the sheet. Less static in your life? Yeah, it's the sheet. Smelling fresher than ever? It's the sheet. Oh, so soft fabric? Ooh la la, it's the sheet. Less wrinkles on your clothes? You know it's the sheet. Bounce dryer sheets. More freshness, more softness. Less static, less wrinkles. It's the sheet.
I'm still going for it, even with higher stroke risk from atrial fibrillation and a regular heartbeat not caused by a heart valve problem. Over a 3-year study, Eliquis apixaban tablets reduced stroke risk better than warfarin, and over 97% of Eliquis patients did not experience a stroke. A first stroke occurred in 2.9% of warfarin patients versus 2.3% of Eliquis patients.
Don't stop taking prescription Eliquis without asking your doctor. It may increase your stroke risk. Eliquis can cause serious and in rare cases fatal bleeding. Don't take Eliquis if you have an artificial heart valve, abnormal bleeding, or antiphospholipid syndrome. While taking, you may bruise more easily or take longer for bleeding to stop. A spinal injection while on Eliquis increases risk of blood clots, which may cause paralysis, the inability to move. Get medical help right away for unexpected bleeding, unusual bruising, or tingling, numbness, or muscle weakness. Medications such as aspirin products, NSAIDs, SSRIs, SNRIs, and blood thinners may increase bleeding risk. Tell your doctor about all planned medical or dental procedures. Learn more at Eliquis.com or call 1-855-ELIQUIS.
InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
When it comes to protection from wrongful conviction, the Fifth Amendment is essential, according to our next guest. And what should you do if law enforcement officers start asking you questions? InfoTrack's Roy Mackey is here with the story. Roy?
Thank you, Chris. We're talking with James Duane. He's a professor at Regent Law School in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Millions of people are familiar with him because of one of his lectures posted on YouTube several years ago called Don't Talk to the Police. He's now the author of You Have the Right to Remain Innocent. We'll assume that at least some people in our audience haven't seen your YouTube lecture, so let's just start with a quick summary of why you advise people not to speak to the police.
Well, the problem is that it's difficult to give a quick summary because, honestly, there are so many different ways in which an encounter with the police can go very, very badly for you, even if you are innocent. The first chapter of the book gives at least a dozen different reasons why even innocent people can later regret a voluntary meeting with the police is the biggest mistake of their life. Most of them don't, but many of them do, and some of them do it from inside a jail cell, falsely convicted of a crime they didn't commit, and many of them because of a conviction that never even would have resulted if they had kept their mouth shut.
Most people think if I'm truly innocent and just simply tell the truth, that's got to be helpful to me, but you don't necessarily agree.
Oh, absolutely not. And by the way, I'm not the only one. The subtitle of the book is What Police Officers Tell Their Own Children About the Fifth Amendment. I've lectured around the country about this subject to literally thousands of college students and law students for the past 8 years. And almost everywhere I go, I ask them, hey, is there anybody here who's got a parent who's a police officer or a prosecutor? And there's usually one or two. And I ask them, I say, well, what do they tell you about the Fifth Amendment? And every single one, everyone, 100% without exception, says they told me the same thing. When I was a young kid, they told me don't ever, ever talk to the police. If you ever have a police officer ask you to answer a couple of questions, you tell them no and you call me right away. Day in and day out, police officers get people to make damaging admissions. Not necessarily an outright confession, but just confirming, well, okay, yeah, I was there. I saw the whole thing. I wasn't involved, but I saw the whole thing. And yes, the guy who did have the gun, he was a friend of mine. And yes, it's true, the guy that was shot, turns out he is a member of a rival gang, but I had nothing to do with any of this. Technically, that's not an admission that you were involved in the crime, but guess what? You put yourself at the scene, you gave the police proof that you had the motive and the opportunity to commit the crime. From this point, it's going to be a downhill slide to a conviction and maybe a life in prison for a crime you didn't commit. Very possibly a crime you couldn't have been convicted of if you had kept your mouth shut. But way too many people who ought to know better makes the same fallacious assumption that, oh, if I'm innocent, I've got nothing to hide, so therefore I should talk to the police, because if I don't, that'll make me look guilty, because only guilty people have any reason to remain silent. And that's the mindset that persuades many innocent suspects who ought to know better to go ahead and talk to the police because they're afraid of how it will make them look. And this mindset is even more nefarious in the jury room, because the juries, too, are likely to think of themselves, oh, my goodness, this guy, he's probably guilty of something if he wouldn't talk to the police. The Fifth Amendment is not just for the guilty. It was intentionally written for the protection of the innocent. And it's no less valuable to the innocent, who have just as many rights to assert the privilege as the guilty do. But it has become, as I say in the book, the constitutional privilege that dare not speak its name, because you can no longer tell the police, oh, I don't want to talk to you because I want to assert my Fifth Amendment privilege. There's too many ways that can go badly for you as well. What you need to do instead is assert your Sixth Amendment right to an attorney. Tell the police you'll talk to them, sure, but not until they get a lawyer for you. And then when there's a lawyer there, then you'll talk to them.
When you say don't talk to the police, does that apply to basically every circumstance? Let's say, for example, that I witness a robbery. Do you think I need an attorney before telling the police what I saw?
You've got to be very cautious, I'm sad to say, even in that situation as well. A good friend of mine was the first one to discover the murdered body of an individual with whom he was related. It was a relative of his, and he contacted the police, and they took him into custody, and there was no evidence, absolutely none, that he was involved in the killing or that he had any motive to commit this murder against his own nephew. But the police had no other suspects, and the natural inclination of far too many police officers is to think to themselves, well, before we let this guy go, let's interrogate him for 4, 5, 6 hours if he'll let us, and see if we can maybe trip him up into giving us a damaging admission. It's also reflective of the natural, powerful human desire we all have for closure. We want to believe that we could find the guy who did this, and if we've only got one potential suspect, darn if he isn't starting to look more and more guilty the more we look at the guy.
Our guest on InfoTrack is Professor James Duane from Regent Law School in Virginia Beach, Virginia. He's the author of the book, You Have the Right to Remain Innocent. Now, maybe it's your criminal defense attorney past, but I'm going to ask, I think many people would say you have a very deep mistrust of law enforcement officers. Is that fair or unfair?
It's close to fair. I wouldn't put it quite that way. I wouldn't say that I have a deep mistrust of law enforcement officers per se, as if it were somehow indicative of any kind of a personal animosity on my part. I want to believe the best of everyone, and I'm a great admirer of police officers and the extraordinarily valiant and courageous ways in which they risk their very lives for our protection. And I say that in the book too. It's nothing personal. They're just doing their job. The only problem I have with the police is that they're only human, and they're working within the constraints of an extraordinarily imperfect legal system that they did not build, they did not design. And the system is being run and populated by nitwits and incompetents in the prosecutor's office and in the jury room, who sometimes are doing a great job, but you have no way that you can presume that your case is going to fall into the hands of the world's finest and most sophisticated prosecutors or jurors. And these people sometimes make the most egregious mistakes. And the more information you give to the police, the more likely it is that you'll end up getting convicted for something you didn't do. So no, I wouldn't say that I'm deeply suspicious of police officers, but I am deeply suspicious in 100 different ways of an extraordinarily imperfect criminal justice system.
One of the things you also write about is when you are in a few limited cases answering questions from a police officer, you should only answer in the present tense and not in the past tense. Explain that.
Sure. There's one important exception to all of this, because it would be ridiculous to tell everybody, don't ever talk to the police, don't ever say a word. There's one important exception. On those rare occasions when you find yourself suddenly in the presence of a police officer who finds you doing something that obviously calls out for explanation. He finds you, for example, crawling into your own house through a window that you just broke in the dark in the back of the house. Don't be a jerk. Don't say to the officer, no, I will not tell you whether I live here. Are you profiling me because of my race? Don't be an idiot. The police officer is only being perfectly reasonable. He's only doing his job. For goodness sake, wouldn't you want him asked the same questions of anybody else that he found climbing into your house at night while your wife and kids are sleeping in there? Of course you would. Here's my name. Here's my identification. And here is why I am climbing in through the window, because this is my house. But all you will tell him under those circumstances are two things: who you are and why you are doing what you are doing right then and there. And we're only talking about explaining things that the police officer just saw with his own eyes. You will not answer questions, even then, about the past tense. If he tries to strike up a little conversation about how long you've been here, and what time did you get here, and where were you an hour ago, and who were you with, and what were you doing, the answer to that is I will not tell that kind of information to the police or anybody else who works for any government agency. And to those of your listeners who think I sound like an extremist or paranoid or unpatriotic, let me be the first to confess, from the bottom of my heart, I wish this weren't the advice I had to give the whole world. I wish this weren't the advice I've got to give my students and my own children. And that, by the way, criminal defense lawyers are giving all their clients and police officers are giving their own children.
I would presume that if everyone took your advice, there certainly would be fewer innocent people wrongfully convicted. But would it reduce the number of crimes overall solved?
Well, yes, of course. If by solved you mean successfully closed because we were able to pin it on somebody, yeah, I'll guarantee you that's going to happen. That's the reason for the book. Right now we're convicting way too many innocent people. The more important part of your question is whether this information, if it's widely enough disseminated, will actually make it more difficult for the police to convict guilty people as well. I'm not that worried about that. I really am not, for a whole host of reasons. Number one, I don't think in most criminal prosecutions, serious criminal prosecutions of seriously guilty people convicted of terrible crimes, the confession that they obtain from the guy is not usually the critical linchpin of the case. You know, Tim McVeigh committed the worst crime at the time in American history. He never gave the police any information. He didn't talk. He didn't confess. But they were able to put together a case against him just fine. Lots and lots of guilty people are convicted all the time. The ones who are talking, well, it's easier to convict them. The ones who don't talk, more often than not, we can find a way to prove that they were the ones who did it and to convict them as well.
James Duane, professor at Regent Law School in Virginia Beach, Virginia, the author of You Have the Right to Remain Innocent. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
Next, Gen X women are facing a midlife crisis. That story coming up.
Stick around. There's more InfoTrack straight ahead.
Free. Who doesn't love free? With Milo's rewards, you get the member-only treatment that's actually worth it. Enjoy free member gifts you'll love. And once you reach Silver Key status, you can get free standard shipping. Because Lowe's knows nothing feels better than free. Learn more about our new loyalty program at Lowe's.com/Milo's rewards today. Program subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Member gifts may be subject to additional terms and restrictions. See Lowe's.com/shipping terms for details. Subject to change.
Hey, pet parents. With Progressive's collision coverage, you get extra protection for your cat or dog because there's nothing worse than seeing your pet hurt. Like when you see their face after accidentally stepping on their tail and you say, "I'm so sorry, Mr. Pickles." But as you kiss his nose and rub his little belly welly, you know Mr. Pickles is thinking, "You betrayed me." Anywho, Progressive pays up to $1,000 in vet bills if your pet is injured in an auto accident. Learn more at Progressive.com and watch where you step. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Collision coverage subject to policy terms. Not available in all states.
The good folks at Wendy's have a revolutionary new product for you. Introducing the new Orange Dreamsicle Frosty. It's like a time machine that takes you all the way back to now, the year 2024. It's the classic, creamy, orangey flavor you remember. Dare I say, it's new timey. It's the flavor you grew up with, just all grown up. Head over to your local Wendy's establishment and get yours while supplies last. The new Orange Dreamsicle Frosty. Here for the now, for now.
Limited time only at participating Wendy's.
When you use Bounce dryer sheets and your clothes look amazing, it's the sheet. Less static in your life? Yeah, it's the sheet. Smelling fresher than ever? It's the sheet. Oh, so soft fabric? Ooh la la, it's the sheet. Less wrinkles on your clothes? You know it's the sheet. Bounce dryer sheets. More freshness, more softness. Less static, less wrinkles. It's the sheet.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks. To learn more about our guests or listen to past shows, visit InfoTrack online at InfoTrackRadio.com. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
Among so-called Generation X women, those in their 40s and 50s, there's a new midlife crisis that's causing worries and sleepless nights. Here with the details, InfoTrack's Gina Tedesco. Gina?
Thanks, Chris. Many Americans have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep, but for Generation X women, the problem is unique and not widely understood. Joining us now is Ada Calhoun, award-winning journalist and author of Why We Can't Sleep, Women's New Midlife Crisis. She explains the root causes and offers solutions. Ms. Calhoun, before we get to the solutions, you say the problem is expectations and cultural challenges. But wouldn't it be fair to say that Generation Men also face these difficulties to some degree?
Yes, actually, it's very funny. I've been hearing from a lot of men this week that they relate to pretty much everything in the book except for the menopause chapter.
I can understand that. Now, your book does list several other challenges, though, that produce worries and sleeplessness. Let's take those one at a time. First, you say many American Gen X women were raised as latchkey kids in a bleak economy among a boom in divorce, crime, and abuse. So what effect does this have?
Well, it's funny because we were raised in a rough time while being told that we should reach for the stars, that, you know, girls can be anything, even president, and don't be a nurse, be a doctor. And we were given all these messages about what we should try to achieve. We should have it all. We should do it all. But the reality we saw in our lives was quite rough. 40% of us were children of divorce. A lot of times we didn't have the money for college. And, you know, the combination of reach for the stars and you're on your own, it's really setting people up for failure.
And is that the effect of the message of have it all, kids and a career?
I think that a lot of women that I interviewed, and I talked to a couple hundred for this book, a lot of them felt real shame if they had only achieved a few things in their lives. Some of them said, you know, what did I do wrong? I only had this career. What did I do wrong? I only had these kids. I think there's just this real internalized shame around not having it all, not doing it all. Nothing ever seems like enough for women of our generation.
And this does raise the broader question of whether feminism has let women down. Your views?
I don't think it's feminism. I think it's the world. I think, you know, it's great to be told, do it all, have it all, if the world is going to adjust to make that possible. But when the world doesn't make any changes, when men don't stay home in the same proportion, for example, that women go into the workplace, why do you blame women for having screwed up? Why do you blame this message? Why not blame the fact that actually nobody's making life easier for these women?
And there were many practical concerns. For example, in 2008, we had that great recession. So Gen Xers graduated into a weak economy. Now, what effect did this have on women's psyche?
Well, it's so funny because as I was doing this research, I was so shocked by just how bad the luck that Generation X was. I mean, it was relentless, right? So you're right. We graduated, a lot of us, into weak job markets. And then, you know, some of us entered the workforce in the early 90s recession. And then we had the jobless recovery, you'll recall. And then, you know, younger ones might have gotten into the kind of good period of the late 90s. But then, of course, we had the dot-com bubble burst, and then the 2001 recession, and on, and the housing crisis hit us harder than any other generation, and we have more debt now than any other generation. I think women think it's their fault. I think that women have been working hard for a long time, and things aren't getting better, and why aren't they? I hope that these numbers will help women see that it's not that they screwed up, necessarily.
We're visiting with Ada Calhoun, award-winning journalist and author of Why We Can't Sleep, Women's New Midlife Crisis. As to your solutions, you talk about Gen X women reframing their lives. Tell us what this means.
Well, I think it's really necessary to look at what we have and not what we don't have, to look at how much we've been able to accomplish with very, very little help as a generation. I think it's important to get around other women, to get a real reality check, and not online, but actually face to face, where you can have real conversations about what people are really going through. And I think we need a lot more support. I think we need more support from partners, from employers, from society, so that if we're going to try to pull off all the things we're trying to pull off at work and at home and as far as caregiving, that, you know, we have a better shot at it.
Now, let's drill down on what you were talking about on reframing their lives and talking with other women. You say that you'd like to see women learn to see themselves as heroines worth rooting for. Is that the component that's missing?
I think it's really important. So I teach memoir a lot. And when I teach it, I see a real transformation in a lot of the women, especially who take these classes, because they're able to see themselves as the protagonist and then to really look at, like, what's the beginning, what's the middle, what's the end, what are the turning points in their story, and who are the heroes and who are the villains. And once you look at yourself as a character and the people around you as characters, sometimes it becomes easier to see the narrative, easier to see the plot. And I find that very helpful.
And is also part of the answer to celebrate not just the successes you have recorded, as you pointed out before, but also to go a little further, to honor them, even if they're not exactly what you envisioned.
Yes, I think this idea that because we could do anything, we have to do everything is very toxic. And I think that once women realize that they've been able to do really well given what they were up against, I think that that can be really healing.
You mentioned having a support system. What does that look like exactly, and how does a Gen Xer create one?
Well, for me, I wound up realizing that I needed help on a lot of different levels. So I got a good doctor. I got a good accountant. I started a club with other women my age where we meet once a month and talk. I think it can look different for every woman out there, but I think it comes down to looking at what you need and finding it.
What about spouses or significant others, as you mentioned before? What advice would you specifically give them to help Gen X women?
Well, I've been hearing from a lot of men this week who read the book and felt like they saw their spouses more clearly and they realized more what they were up against, especially as far as caregiving. I think men of this generation are doing so much more than their fathers were doing that they feel really good about that. And they're confused if women are still frustrated or still feel like they're doing more. If you look at the numbers, they're doing more than their fathers, but they're not doing anywhere near as much often as the women in the household.
And you suggested various steps to take care of yourself. You've already referenced some of them. How important is it to eat well?
I think anything that's going to help you maintain some stasis in your life is good. I think food is part of it. I think hormones are part of it. And so getting a good doctor who understands menopause and how hard it can be on the body is really key. You know, I think all the traditional advice that we know applies about getting out in nature and exercising and all that. But what I argue in the book is that this is bigger than that. This is systemic. And it's not like if you go do a cleanse or do a spa retreat that these problems are going to go away. These problems are deep.
Finally, even though a Gen Xer has challenges with kids and family and a job as they are right now, do you recommend keeping an eye on the future when we might evolve into a situation that's more favorable without those stressors? And those are the days worth waiting for.
Yeah. Well, I have a lot of friends who are in their 50s and 60s, and they do tell me it gets better. They tell me that, you know, once the kids are out of the house, once menopause is passed, once all these other things are different, that they're able to see their lives more clearly and they're able to really be themselves more. And I'm looking forward to that in my own life.
Ada Calhoun, author of Why We Can't Sleep, Women's New Midlife Crisis. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
For InfoTrack, I'm Gina Tedesco.
You're listening to InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know.
Not to brag, but Progressive's Name Your Price tool is mankind's greatest tool ever. Even better than the wheel. Sure, without the wheel, we wouldn't have modern transportation or funny videos of dogs riding skateboards. But without the Name Your Price tool, we wouldn't have easy access to auto insurance options based on our budget. And, well, cars do need wheels. They also need insurance, and insurance never goes flat. Learn more about the greatest tool ever, the Name Your Price tool, at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Not available in all states.
When you use Bounce dryer sheets and your clothes look amazing, it's the sheet. Less static in your life? Yeah, it's the sheet. Smelling fresher than ever? It's the sheet. Oh, so soft fabric? Ooh la la. It's the sheet. Less wrinkles on your clothes? You know it's the sheet. Bounce dryer sheets. More freshness, more softness. Less static, less wrinkles. It's the sheet.
Recent research reveals that having surgical patients prep both mind and body before surgery can be very helpful. Michael Engelsby is a medical doctor and professor of surgery at the University of Michigan in the section of transplantation surgery, and he was head of the research team. Doctor, first tell us how you conducted the study, and then we'll get into the specific results.
Sure. We looked at two groups of patients, one group where across 24 hospitals in Michigan, we kind of trained them. Physical and psychological preparation for big operations. I mean, the other group didn't get this, and we looked at the difference in their outcome. We primarily focused on how much additional care they needed after discharge from the hospital. So kind of like intensity of care. And the thought would be that the less stuff the health system does to you after surgery, the better off you are. Bottom line is we did this work with Medicare, so we also had to demonstrate that this program reduced costs, which it did.
And what were some of the specific areas that you had people modify their behavior?
When a physician tells you you need a big operation, it's a teachable moment, I guess is a good way to put it. And patients in my practice, I've always noticed that when I tell them to do things like stop smoking, they always listen. So surgeons in general don't really make that part of their practice. They don't help patients kind of do behavioral health modification at all, let alone prior to surgery. So we took advantage of this kind of teachable moment with patients and tried to get them kind of optimally prepared for surgery. That includes increasing activity, changing their diet, stopping smoking, getting kind of psychologically ready.
Yeah, in terms of the psychological aspect, that's very interesting. What sort of mind things, mental things would you ask a patient to do?
To be honest, not very much. I mean, we had to develop a program that's kind of relevant for everyone. And some patients, you know, just aren't going to do the physical activity, or they're just not going to quit smoking. And they, when you start talking to them about things like positive psychology, they really don't want to hear about it. So we really created a kind of a multi-pronged offering so that there's something for everyone. With respect to positive psychology, family and friends are an important part of the care team. So it's kind of planning that really helps manage stress, particularly for older patients. The stress of just being away from home and worrying about imposing upon others is such a big deal. So the fundamentals of it are essentially care planning. And we talked a good bit about mindset and trying to take some time for yourself to empower yourself. So how this actually works, all of these things, the physical and the psychological activity, I think it's really about patient empowerment. It's a scary time when you need to have a big operation, and we try to turn some of that energy you have into positive energy so that you're more empowered prior to the surgery.
Is any of this advice before surgery typical of other surgeons who weren't in this research program? I mean, is this something they teach in medical school that's helpful to do with patients?
No, this is new stuff. There's a growing interest and movement in what we call prehabilitation. So there's rehabilitation when you recover from some health event, but this is kind of preparation. And the analogy I like to use is if, you know, you and I were going to run a 5-kilometer race, you probably wouldn't want to do it tomorrow. You'd want to prepare. You'd want to train just like an athlete trains. And a 2-hour operation is about as hard on your body as a 5-kilometer race. So just the way an athlete prepares, our patients should prepare. Very few doctors do this now, but it's catching on. At my institution, University of Michigan, it's now standard of care for major inpatient abdominal and thoracic surgeries. So things like hysterectomies, major hernias, major cancer surgery, lung surgery, transplant. We offer the opportunity for this program to all of our patients.
Doctor, if someone is listening who has surgery planned and their doctor hasn't suggested this, what advice would you have for that person?
Websites like the AARP, and we have a website, the University of Michigan, Cleveland Clinic, Mayo Clinic, they all have a lot of good educational information around preoperative preparation. But put more bluntly, walking is the foundation of the program. So however many steps you take, try to increase it every day from the time you start the program to the time of surgery. We encourage a high protein diet. Be thoughtful about what you eat. And then make a very specific care plan with all of your friends and family about the day before surgery, the day of surgery, and then the recovery time, so that everyone's ready to kind of help you, because you're going to need to rely on those individuals. I think those are kind of the three core tenets. The more obvious things would be if you smoke, you really do need to quit smoking. This is the opportunity. Smoking can have a devastating impact on your surgical outcomes, and this hopefully can be the pivot moment where you can stop that.
Michael Engelsby, MD, a professor of surgery at the University of Michigan and head of the research team in this study we've been talking about. Doctor, thank you so much for joining us today.
Honor, pleasure. Thank you.
And that wraps up this week's show. InfoTrack's executive producer is Randy Meyer, and I'm Chris Witte. Our internet services are provided by Pear.com. Thanks for listening. We hope you'll be here next week for another edition of InfoTrack.
1057 CFW.
1057 CFW.
Mornings with Mike McKay and the best of the 80s, 90s, and more.
CFW.
Come on, shake your body, baby, do that conga. No, you can't control yourself any longer. Come on, shake your body, baby, do that conga. No, you can't control yourself any longer.
At work, listening to some local radio station, and you
nod off.
Could be dangerous. Could even get you fired.
Wait, what happened?
Well, have we got the solution for you? We designed 105.7 CFW so you can listen to it all day long. This is the Valley's fun music, and that means no falling asleep. Wake up. Toss that other station on the finished pile.
And plan to spend your workday with us instead.
105.7 CFW.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute and a tip about how to get out of credit card debt. It's going to sound so simple, it's silly. Call your credit card company and ask them for a lower interest rate. I mean, they really will do this sometimes. Now, before you call, get your facts together. If you've been doing all the right things, you know, like paying on time every month, tell them that and ask for a lower rate. If you're going through a tough time, like unemployment, tell them your story. In most cases, they'd rather get something from you than nothing. And if they still don't budge, let them know you're thinking about leaving. Mention lower rates you've seen from other credit cards. And finally, if you really don't get anywhere with the first person you talk to, call back and, you know, try talking to somebody else. A 20-minute call could save you hundreds of dollars a year. Okay, folks, that was your Work Money Minute. For more everyday money help, go to workmoney.org. Till next time, I'm Carrie Joy saying take good care.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Freezing conditions early. We'll see sunny skies, lower 60s in the afternoon, a northwest breeze. Clear skies, mid-30s overnight as our wind turns to the south. That'll bring in warmer temperatures Monday. Some showers, increasing clouds, and breezy in upper 60s. It's 30 at our studios.
CFW.
We'll be right back.
1057 CFW.